Before we get into today's episode, I want to let you know about a source of powerful free resources to help you as a parent or grandparent get equipped to invest in the faith of the next generation. Our Next Gen website has been designed to help empower you to navigate tough issues with the young people in your life. At Next Gen, you'll find articles, entertainment reviews from a Christian perspective, parenting stories, helpful parenting guides, and even answers to the tough questions. All these resources are free as you engage on the front line of raising the next generation for Jesus. So why not register today at premierinsight.org/resources to receive free resources from NextGen. That's premierinsight.org/resources. And now it's time for today's podcast.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Hello and welcome to the show that brings you the thought and theology of C.S. Lewis. I'm Ruth Jackson and we have something rather special for you this week. But before we dive into this episode, just a quick reminder to check out our website where you can find lots of great articles and podcasts as well as more C.S. Lewis content. Visit premierunbelievable.com. And if you register or sign up for our newsletter there, you can get yourself a free ebook. I'd also love to invite you to be a part of our unbelievable live event, Culture War Questions, with apologist Sean McDowell tomorrow. That's Tuesday the 15th of November. Sean's most recent book, A Rebel's Manifesto, is aimed at believers who want to act with grace and speak with truth into polarizing issues such as LGBT, pornography, abortion, morality, and more. Sean McDowell and Justin Brierley will take audience questions on the hot-button issues dividing culture and help you learn how to give a reason for your hope with gentleness and respect. Please join us online from anywhere in the world on Tuesday the 15th of November at 8 p.m. UK. That's 3 p.m. Eastern and 12 noon Pacific. This is your last chance to register. Visit www.unbelievable.live. It is free to attend, but registration is essential. www.unbelievable.live. But now for today's show. Justin Brierley recently visited The Kilns, the Oxford home of C.S. Lewis, which he shared at various times with Mrs. Moore and his brother Warnie, as well as Joy Gresham and her children after she became Lewis's wife. The C.S. Lewis Foundation own the house and have preserved it in keeping with the era that Lewis lived there, as a way of preserving his legacy for future generations. Justin was accompanied on his recent visit by New Testament scholar Justin Bass, and the tour was led by scholar-in-residence Trevin Wax. Trevin Wax is the author of numerous books, including his latest, The Thrill of Orthodoxy. You can find out more about Trevin in the two previous episodes of this podcast. Trevin Wax is not an official tour guide for the C.S. Lewis Foundation, but was very happy to share his knowledge of the home. For tours of the kilns and to support the C.S. Lewis Foundation, visit their website www.cslewis.org. And now we join Justin and Trevin at the front door of the kilns.
So Trevin, we're here at the kilns.
We are.
And you're staying here for a little while.
Yes, that's
right. Sort
of
as the scholar in residence.
That's right. One of the scholars in residence.
Okay.
There's a number of scholars that stay here. And I'm one of the temporary ones, just here for a couple of weeks to do some teaching and writing.
Wow. And we're entering the green door now.
That's right.
And this is essentially kept in the same sort of state that or style that
yes.
Lewis would have lived here in the
yes.
1950s and 60s.
Same kind of fashion and style. Most of the furniture and stuff is not original to the house, but they certainly have restored it to be somewhat like it was.
And we're entering the sitting room. You say this is probably the best sort of most famous room in the
yes,
house.
Yes, they call it the common room. This is the house. Many people have seen pictures of Lewis at a desk with some windows, or maybe sitting in a chair with some bookshelves behind him. Mm-hmm. And this is the room where he would have where he received guests.
Yeah.
And so, Lewis lived here for 33 years. And I'm sure the layout of this room and the way the furniture was would change here and there. It definitely has the feel a little bit of a bachelor pad.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they didn't keep it in great nick when he was living here with his brother Wardy, did they?
No, no. In fact, what they tell me is that they didn't have ashtrays here, so when people would come and smoke, they'd just basically let the ash fall into the carpet, and then they claimed that it kept away moths.
There you go. So, well,
good reason.
It's probably looking better actually than when Lewis was living here then. But
yes, but
and the books, these aren't presumably original to the house.
No, no, these are Lewis's library is now housed at the Wade Center at Wheaton College in Wheaton, Illinois. These are books that have been chosen because they're either about Lewis, mm-hmm. or they are books that had some kind of influence on Lewis, or books that he really loved.
Great.
So see a whole selection of George MacDonald up there. You can find some G.K. Chesterton.
Yeah.
Quite a number of biographies and letters
of Lewis
and
himself. Yes, yeah. Of Lewis. And then a lovely map of Narnia above the fireplace.
That's right. Yeah.
Super. Yeah. Great. And you're going to take us through to the...
The dining room here, yes. Yeah, so this here is the dining room. It is, you know, this was a house that had a lot of people living in it,
mm-hmm.
at different times. I mean, a lot of people know the story of during World War II, of course. They brought in adolescents that stayed here because they were fleeing from London during the Blitz. But that's just one part of the house's story. Of course, Lewis lived here with Mrs. Moore, who was an older lady, her daughter, Maureen. And they were here for, you know, Lewis lived here for 33 years, and this house had constant guests, hospitality. His brother, Warney, lived here, obviously, for a long amount of time. So so this would be one of the places they would entertain people. And this one of the things that is original in the house is the typewriter.
Yes, tell us about this typewriter. There's actually a letter that's placed
inside.
That's
right. Now, you know, Lewis himself actually wrote everything by hand.
Mm.
He felt like by dipping the pen and the ink and writing the way he wanted to write, it gave him enough time to be formulating the next sentence as he was writing. But Warney would type things up, and this typewriter here, I think it says something on it like he used it for how long, it says there.
So the paper that's in the typewriter.
It's the last one.
I can't see when it says how long he used it for.
35 years, right
there.
It has been my companion for 35 years, almost half my lifetime. So he apparently used it so long, and then once finally some piece of it broke, and then he you know, looked around and tried to find a way of getting it fixed, and there was nothing could be done for it. It was terminal at that point. So he writes this sort of elegy, an elegy at the end of the typewriter's life, and puts it here.
Warney obviously wrote himself quite a bit, but
did he
act as a sort of secretary for Lewis at some level when it came to this sort of thing?
He did most of the typing up of, you know, the official correspondence, I think, of when Lewis would get letters that needed a formulated response.
Yes.
Warney would do that, and then let Lewis answer personally other letters. But he did on this type up what he says the Lewis papers. So this was family papers and things like that that he did on that typewriter.
Great, great stuff. There you go.
This is the hallway here, and there is a wardrobe here. This is where a wardrobe that was somewhat of the inspiration for Lewis's wardrobe actually stood. That wardrobe is now at the Wade Center at Wheaton College. There's a picture of it right here.
So that's the original wardrobe that stood here.
That's the one that was in the family that Lewis and that Jack and Warney would have played in or known as kids.
Mm.
And then it stood here for a long time, and then it was taken to Wheaton. There's a wardrobe that is similar.
Yeah. And is this officially the wardrobe that inspired the famous wardrobe?
Well, you know, I don't think Lewis ever wrote that down, what wardrobe would have inspired him, but this was the sort of family wardrobe that remained in the family. So that one at Wheaton, and this is where it stood for, you know, in this hallway here.
In this hallway. There we go.
We're coming into the kitchen now. This, what you can see from the pictures on the wall, again, this was a bustling place of activity.
Yes.
This picture here of an older gentleman, this is Paxford, the gardener.
Oh, right.
So he was the gardener, kept up with lots of things. But Lewis fans will know that Paxford is actually the inspiration for one of Lewis's most beloved characters from Narnia, Puddleglum.
Oh, really?
The Marshwiggle from The Silver Chair. Now, Paxford had this funny way of being... somewhat negative, pessimistic.
Mm-hmm.
So if it was a pretty day, he'd talk about how it's about to start raining. It's like that kind of just, and you
glass
know,
always half empty. Yeah.
Always half empty. So, but the thing is about Paxford, he's a humorous character, but also Puddleglum and Narnia is as well. But he does kind of save the day.
Yes. Yeah.
At the end of the day,
he's the one who sees through the fire.
Yeah.
The enchantments. Yeah.
And you see the housekeepers here, and there's a young Doug Gresham, Lewis's stepson, sitting there.
Oh, cool.
So this was a place of a lot of activity, because you know there people were coming and going, and this is the room I'm staying in for now, where they put the temporary scholars, Doug Gresham's room.
Right.
It would also have been used for, you know, occasionally the housekeepers, usually the housekeepers didn't live in the house, but if they needed to be here briefly, they would before Joy Gresham and Douglas and David were here. This was the room where they could kind of have their own spots off of the kitchen.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the
picture on the wall, are they of Douglas as a young man?
Yes, Douglas as a child, and then Douglas as a young man. The kilns was pretty dilapidated.
Mm.
You can imagine they didn't really do much upkeep. And there's this funny story that Douglas tells, which I think you can actually still see the lines in the wall. But he was sitting on his bed and he had a premonition, and he got up and he walked over and was leaving the room, and a piece of like a portion of the ceiling caved in and fell on the bed.
Wow.
And so, and I think you can kind of see that, like, I don't know if that's actually,
yeah, you can see maybe where it was repaired. Yeah.
But I think at that point it got the attention of Lewis and Warney, and they thought, well, you know, we probably should do some repairs at the kilns. So
yeah, there's a beautiful sort of old writing desk and some again, furniture that looks of the period, let's say. I'm sure it's not original to the room.
Yes, yeah, a nice little rug they put in here.
But it does look the part. Yeah.
It's a nice place to study for sure.
Yeah. And each room has its own sort of little hearth, doesn't it? Its own fire grate, where in days before central heating, you know, you needed to have...
That's right. That's right. And the bedrooms each have a sink as well.
Yes.
So that's one of the interesting things about this house, is that there's a toilet straight ahead, and then there's a room with a bathtub next to it. And they're not, you know, nowadays we
you'd put them all
together
sure,
but not that way.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is, were it not for the Lewis connection, you can imagine this house would have been radically altered by now, or refurbished or something. But obviously, it's been important to keep it just as it was, in a way, from the 50s and 60s. We're now going up a little windy staircase to.
Become a shrine.
It has become a shrine of sorts, hasn't it?
It's a little
bit of an evangelical shrine.
But living here, it's a cross between a museum and a college dorm.
Yes.
How it feels.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So right up here, there is something kind of cool that they've done here. This is the attic.
Oh wow!
And you know, when Lewis and his brother lived in Ireland, they would sneak up into the attic and they would play. They would create little worlds, and Boxen is one of the worlds they created. And so they thought, you know, in order to show what that was like, they recreated here at the kilns just a little taste of the kind of joy and fun that Lewis and Warney had.
A little hidey hole out of the way. And I can see there's a sort of little tribute almost to Narnia, a small wardrobe with some snow and woods.
And some heavy coats.
Yeah,
there. So, yes.
That's lovely. Yeah. Well, I mean, in fact, what would this little room have been used for? Would it have just been storage?
I assume storage, probably knowing Lewis, at some point there were books in here.
Yeah.
He would have had his books primarily at where he was teaching. not here at the house, most of them. But yeah, this was would have been storage. Mm. I think there might be in Shadowlands the movie. Mm-hmm. There's a scene with, if I'm recalling correctly, there's a scene with Anthony Hopkins, who plays Lewis, maybe talking with Douglas or something up in the attic at some point. I can't remember. I have to go back and look.
Yeah.
But might be
that's,
the case.
That's great. That's really nice.
We are now in Lewis's study. It was Lewis's study from about for the last decade or so of his life, more than a decade of his life. Actually, this room belonged to Mrs. Moore.
Originally.
Mm-hmm. So it was the warmest room in the house because mm-hmm. it's right over the kitchen, so yeah. the heat would rise. And this room, the door between these rooms, that door was shut and locked for 20-something years. And so Lewis would actually go outside the house and around to get up to his bedroom.
And he had a sort of external staircase built to his own room, didn't
he? That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
For the privacy, yeah.
But after Mrs. Moore's death, they turned this room into his study. So there's a couple of very famous pictures of Lewis and the later Lewis answering letters or writing books. And that is right here in this room.
Yeah, super.
So the Lewis's desk is at the Wade Center at Wheaton, but this is very similar.
Are these letters just copies, or are they original Lewis letters? They look weathered, and they have Lewis's signature at the bottom, but who knows whether they're...
I don't know. I have to ask the warden about that.
It's beautiful. Just to paint a little picture for podcast listeners, obviously there's a pipe atop the weather-beaten looking letters on this lovely old writing table in the middle of this study, and there's a fireplace as well, where I'm sure there would have been a fire going on a cold winter's evening, but otherwise it's another house, another room in a house. And there is a bed in here, but was it just sort of, was that here when it was being used as a study, do you think?
You know, I'm not sure about that. I can look and see over here. Looks like it was a chair here at the time. But the bed is here because, again, scholars that stay in the house, sometimes if they need an extra bed. An extra room, they put that there. But you can see the English literature in the 16th century, looks like a pretty early, not a first edition copy of this large book by Lewis. But, we think of him so much in the realm of apologetics that we can forget this is sort of his magnum opus.
Yeah, his great work, really.
I mean, look how long that book is. 600 almost 700 pages right there.
Extraordinary. So, basically summarizing everything written in the 16th century.
He really does.
He read everything.
Yeah, so
yeah,
he did a lot of work on that.
Yeah. I mean, apologetics and Christian writing was really his side thing. I mean, this was his main body of work, was...
That's what he lectured on.
Exactly. Yeah.
Just last night, actually, I met with someone who was in one of Lewis's lectures in 1958.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
In the summer, he did. He sat in on three of his lectures on the medieval world, and was at Cambridge. And he said it was packed to the gills, mm-hmm. people everywhere. And he said that even now he recalls some of Lewis's analogies.
Really?
That picture of the medieval mind, he said, of the weight of glory above, the pit below, that living on a vertical line rather than horizontally, the way, a secularizing West tends to see life.
So. Amazing. And we're just walking.
Did he mention how Lewis would come in, taking off his clothes as he's speaking? Did he mention
no,
that?
No, he didn't.
I heard that eyewitness testimony.
I heard that as well. Yeah.
That he would be taking off his coat and already teaching,
already
as
lecturing
he
as he entered already the lecture theatre. Yeah, absolutely.
So we are here now in Lewis's bedroom. Mrs. Moore's room was the hottest room in the house. Lewis's room, as you can tell from all the windows, and because it's over an unheated portion of the house, this would have been the coldest room in the house. And there's a joke that Lewis told at one time, well, not really a joke, but he mentioned on occasion waking up and the glass of water next to his bed being frozen. So you can tell that...
I see they've now got central heating in here, but that wouldn't have been obviously in Lewis's
amazing
day.
People yes.
Yeah. Yes. What's funny is after the door had been shut and locked for so long, that he didn't have the key.
Oh, really?
And so after Mrs. Moore died, and they were like, you know, we really should open up that door so you don't have to walk up the stairs. You know, as he was getting older and, and having some health challenges. And they said that for the longest time he kept walking up because he couldn't find the key. And finally they were like, you know, maybe we should call a locksmith. And they had to come and they had to change the entire door because it had been shut for so long.
Wow.
The wood had warped.
Right.
And there was no getting it open even with a key, you know.
Wonderful. But I mean, very Spartan lodgings for someone who obviously in many people is this intellectual giant, this hero of both literature and Christian apologetics. But he lived essentially a very humble life, really.
He did.
And he wasn't looking for fame or applause.
And but, he could have lived a lot.
Probably could have lived, but this was life. He was just, you know, doing his thing in this corner of Oxford, and this was his house, and yeah.
I don't think he really expected either that we would be having this tour.
No.
60 years, almost 60 years on from his death. He expected after a few years his books would stop selling, and you know, like most writers,
yeah.
I mean, quite frankly,
yeah.
I think he would be shocked and surprised, maybe a bit bemused to see us walking through the house, traipsing through the house, talking about his legacy.
There you go.
But
did you see this, Justin?
Just describe some of the pictures that are on the wall here, if you would, for us.
The Shroud of Turin. This is one thing I wanted to see. Cause
yeah.
His nun. Do you remember what was the nun's name?
Oh, I can't remember. Is it Sister? Penelope or is it
Penelope,
Mary?
Yes.
So tell me about this, Justin.
Well, he interacted with Sister Penelope. Many letters. They went back and forth, and she mailed him a picture of the Shroud of Turin, and I think it was from her like nunnery, like where she was staying, and he kept it on his wall. I think it was on his wall when he died.
There you go.
That's what
is this the original?
I'm not sure about that, but I know this is the. I do remember recalling and hearing that he did have that on as well when he died, but he actually died downstairs in the music room.
Okay.
Because during that last few months of his life, after he'd had that that heart attack and initial scare and had been in a coma, they told him he shouldn't be trying to go up and down the stairs anymore. So they moved his bedroom and down there. But I had heard the same thing, which means they must have also moved the.
I think this
the
is the real
the
thing.
Shroud.
I think that's the original picture he got sent by.
Yeah.
I mean,
just
look at it.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess.
We can ask.
Thank God no one took it. that's a pretty awesome relic of the shrine here.
Yeah. There's a couple of photos just above the hearth as well. What do you know who?
Yes,
yeah,
so
show,
this was Lewis as a young man and dressed up, looks like ready for class. And then over here you have Lewis shortly after they moved to the kilns. Mm. I think Lewis with Maureen and with Mrs. Moore.
Right.
So sort of the family of sorts here.
Yeah, great. There you go. Wow, it's been a great tour. There are a couple more rooms. Is there much more to show?
Let me take you down to the library. This here is where, but we won't go in here because the scholars there's a scholar staying there. But this here is the children's room. So this is where the kids during World War II.
That's where they were evacuated.
That's right.
Great.
That's right.
There you go.
Interesting story, though, about one of the young women who stayed at the kilns during the time. Her name was Jill. She went by June as well, but she was just brought light and life to the house, and they loved having her here. And Lewis said that Lucy Pevensey was based off of her. What's funny is after she left here, she became an actress. I watched actually a few clips from some movies that she was in the 1940s. She's actually the elderly housekeeper in the movie Love Actually.
Oh, really?
From like, I think it's 2003 or so. And she's still living. She married Sigmund Freud's either grandson or great-grandson. And now has a title
here
in England. So, and she's still alive. I think she's 90, maybe early 90s or so.
Do you know if she's ever commented on
that
connection?
Yes, she's talked about this. This is Warney's study, and then you have Warney's bedroom here. They actually built on to the house when they first bought the kilns so that they could they'd have enough room for everybody. But a lot of times when Warney and Jack would want to just talk just as brothers. They would come in here, have the fire going, and they didn't really heat the whole house. They only heated the rooms that they were staying in. Yeah, yeah. But this is where Warney was, and then here is his
little bedroom.
It's his bedroom with his little fireplace. This would have been the end of the house, but now I will take you into the library.
Ah, I see. So this has been... When was this built, then?
This was built after the... The people that took the house in the 1970s, this was a garage, or a garage, or however you say it here.
Garage.
Garage, that's what we say. It's garage, mate. Okay. It's a garage.
It's garage.
That's what this was. And then, actually, when Lewis lived here, it was there was a little bit of space, and then there was a shed.
Okay.
And the shed is where Lewis, in thinking about things, it was actually a place where he was one of the places where he was thinking about his own conversion and about the truthfulness of Christianity. But they turned this this garage into a garage into a library to store a bunch of books.
Yeah.
And they do have a couple of original things in here that are worth seeing.
Oh, cool.
One of them is the piano. This is the actual piano from Maureen, from Lady Dunbar, who she actually inherited a castle.
Wow.
After much later in life. And this is the piano that was in the music room, which is also the room that Lewis died in. He was actually convalescing there, and she came to see him in the latter part of his life when he was beginning to fade somewhat, and wasn't sure he was awake enough to recognize her. And she said who she was, and he responded. She said, "You know, it's Maureen," and he said, "No, it's Lady Dunbar," because she had received a title since they'd last seen each other.
That's great.
So
I can see there are a few shots from the Shadowlands film with Anthony Hopkins just in a frame above the piano. So,
yes, they did some filming here.
Yeah. So presumably they obviously scouted out all the locations, including the kilns, to try and recreate some of the similar environments.
Hanging on the wall there is a very odd picture of an eagle and a toddler.
And a toddler on its back.
Yes. You look at it and you would think that's a bird and a baby.
Indeed.
Well, that's because this was actually the metal hanging sign at the Eagle and Child.
I assumed as much.
Yes. The story goes that Walter Hooper, who was helping with Lewis's literary estate after Lewis died, saw this in a bin as they were cleaning out things from the Eagle and Child, and he bought it for £5 or so, I think.
Wow.
And wanted to preserve it and bring it back to
the
house. So this was the original sign that was hanging at the Eagle and Child when the Inklings would frequent that pub.
We walked past the Eagle and Child earlier on when we were in the centre. I know that it's currently closed, but is it due to be reopened? Do you know?
I've heard just recently, actually, that there's been discussion about what's going to happen with it. A pub across the street called the Lamb and the Child, Lamb and the Flag, that's right. The Lamb and the Flag has reopened.
Okay.
And that was also a place where the Inklings would meet. Go. They met in several, virtually any pub down in Oxford. Someone's had drinks somewhere. The Eastgate Hotel restaurant was also a frequent place for them. You can just imagine over decades of meeting and time that they went to a lot of places. But that's an original.
Well, this new room effectively constitutes this library, the largest room now in the kiln. So I suppose it must be used occasionally for seminars and when there's, you know, small lectures and things.
So the C.S. Lewis Foundation owns the house, and whenever they have a larger group that comes to the house on a tour, they'll start here, usually in the library. It's also the place where summer scholars that come and speak, they'll teach here. And kind of an intimate setting, nice to have people around.
Great. Wow, thank you very much. Does that more or less bring us to the end of the rooms and the tour?
I think so.
Wow, thank you very much, Trevin. It's been fascinating to to get a bit of background.
I'm not an expert tour guide for the kilns. I've only been here a week, but it's
what made you want to come and do this then? To come and sort of live here just for a couple of weeks?
Well, I was working on it started a couple of years ago. I knew I would be working on a book called The Thrill of Orthodoxy, which is a mere Christianity, Chestertonian kind of a book. And I thought, I knew that the kilns had an opportunity for scholars to do some study and research and writing here. And so I sought out, you know, some dates that it might work back in January, February of 2020.
Well, okay. Something else intervened.
Yes. Yeah. That didn't happen in 2020. I had to write that book elsewhere, but still kept in touch. And then this year had an opportunity to do some teaching in Oxford and a conference in Leeds this weekend on C.S. Lewis. And so it just made sense to spend a couple of weeks and meet with some various people that you know as well that are here in Oxford. So,
well, I hope you've enjoyed soaking up the spirit of Lewis that is somehow still preserved in this house.
I have. It's a special place.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast with me, Ruth Jackson. As always, you can find out more about our guest through the links below. And don't forget to check out our website where you can find lots of great articles, podcasts, and more C.S. Lewis content. Visit premierunbelievable.com. Thank you for listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast, and see you next time, where we'll be speaking to a young author who has written a modern take on the Screwtape Letters.